year, CJSF 90.1 FM turns to listeners like you as radio's best friend to support the station with a donation to our fundraising campaign. Our volunteer programmers donate hundreds of hours of their time throughout the year to create the programming you enjoy. Become radio's best friend today with your donation to CJSF's Fund Drive by visiting cjsffunddrive.ca or simply text DONATE to 778-782-2573.
Democracy Now.
Look, we know who Donald Trump is. He is the person who stood at this very spot nearly 4 years ago and sent an armed mob to the United States Capitol to overturn the will of the people in a free and fair election.
Before as many as 75,000 people, Vice President Kamala Harris spoke Tuesday night at the Ellipse in Washington, a week before Election Day. We'll go to the battleground state of Pennsylvania to speak with journalist Mark Lamont Hill. Then we'll look at how Republicans are blanketing the airwaves with transphobic ads ahead of Election Day. We'll speak to Amara Jones, host of the Anti-Trans Hate Machine podcast.
Paramilitary groups have seized upon anti-trans hate to solidify their alliance with supposedly mainstream conservatives. I'll show you how these attacks are part of a coordinated strategy to bring about a patriarchal fascist regime in America, one where queer people would be erased from public life.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The World Food Program is calling for immediate action to prevent famine in the Gaza Strip, warning Palestinians across the besieged territory are losing hope of finding any food for their starving children. The aid agency said Tuesday it has nearly 100,000 tons of food ready for shipment from Egypt and Jordan, enough to feed 1 million Palestinians for 4 months, but that Israel has largely denied access to convoys. The situation is most dire in northern Gaza, where the Israeli army has blocked all aid access for a 25th consecutive day. This comes amidst dire warnings from aid organizations over Israel's decision to ban the UN relief agency, UNRWA. On Tuesday, the UN Humanitarian Office called the policy collective punishment, a war crime, while UNICEF spokesperson James Elder warned of a complete collapse of Gaza's humanitarian system.
You take away the healthcare workers, you take away the nutritional support, you take away the people who will provide the life-saving supplies for a population that is physically, absolutely on death's door, and psychologically, of course, in uncharted territory. You take away these healthcare workers, you take away the nutritionists, then we will see many more children die.
On Tuesday, Israel's military once again bombed residential buildings in Beit Lahia, killing at least 19 Palestinians hours after a separate attack killed at least 93 people, including 25 children. Beit Lahia in northern Gaza has been declared a disaster area amidst weeks of relentless Israeli bombings and military siege. Meanwhile, a new report by the research group Forensic Architecture finds Israel is systematically committing crimes of persecution and destruction in Gaza, amounting to genocide. The group found Israel's destroyed over 83% of all plant life in Gaza, over 70% of agricultural land, nearly half of all groundwater wells and two-thirds of water tanks. Of Gaza's 36 hospitals, Israel's forced 35 to stop service at least once, targeted 31 in bombings and attacks, and violently invaded 10 hospitals. In Lebanon, residents of the city of Baalbek in the Bekaa Valley rushed to flee their homes and businesses today after Israel's military ordered them to leave the city and surrounding villages. The panicked forced displacement came after 2 days of stepped-up attacks by Israel killed at least 60 people in Baalbek. Lebanon's health ministry reports Israeli strikes on Tuesday killed at least 77 people across Lebanon. Among the dead are 10 people, mostly women and children, killed when Israel bombed a residential block in the town of Sarafand. In the occupied West Bank, lawyers for Marwan Barghouti say the longtime Palestinian political prisoner was assaulted by Israeli guards as he was held in solitary confinement. The beating in early September reportedly left Barghouti with numerous injuries to his upper body and a bloody ear that later became infected due to medical neglect. Barghouti's lawyers say he was previously subjected to at least two other attacks by Israeli prison guards. Marwan Barghouti is the most high-profile Palestinian in Israeli detention, who many have described as the Palestinian Nelson Mandela. Diplomats from Norway said Tuesday they're preparing a UN General Assembly resolution asking the International Court of Justice to rule on whether Israel's siege of the Gaza Strip violates international law. On Tuesday, U.S. Envoy to the United Nations, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, told the UN Security Council Israel must allow food, medicine, and other supplies into all of Gaza.
The United States has made clear to Prime Minister Netanyahu that 1 year into this conflict, Israel must address the catastrophic humanitarian crisis in Gaza, that the United States rejects any Israeli efforts to starve Palestinians in Jabalia or anywhere else, and that Israel's words must be matched by action on the ground.
Palestinian ambassador to the UN, Riyad Mansour, called on UN Security Council members to match their words with action, saying, stop this genocide or forever remain silent.
The entire population of North Gaza is at risk of dying. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are at risk of imminent death, faced with the death penalty for refusing to leave their land.
Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces have committed staggering levels of sexual violence, raping civilians and kidnapping women as sex slaves, which may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. That's according to a new report by a UN fact-finding mission. Sudan's 18-month war between the RSF and Sudanese military has uprooted more than 14 million people, the world's largest displacement crisis. UN experts are calling on the International Criminal Court to expand its jurisdiction and investigate possible war crimes committed beyond the region of Darfur. A previous UN mission said both the RSF and Sudanese army may be guilty of atrocities committed during the conflict. This is Amy Pope, Director General of the International Organization for Migration, speaking from Port Sudan.
The situation here is simply catastrophic. There's no other way to put it. We're seeing hunger, disease, sexual violence. They're rampant. And for the people of Sudan, they're telling us it's really just a living nightmare.
In Mozambique, opposition leader Venancio Mondlane is calling on supporters to join him in another wave of protests in the capital Maputo following days of deadly clashes with police. Mozambique authorities have unleashed a brutal crackdown on protesters who've taken to the streets over allegations of fraud in the October 9th presidential and parliamentary elections. Mozambique's debt crisis, corruption, and other issues. Human Rights Watch reports Mozambique armed forces have killed at least 11 protesters, leaving dozens more injured. Here in the United States, Kamala Harris has delivered the last major speech of her campaign for the presidency. On Tuesday, the vice president rallied tens of thousands of supporters on the National Mall on the Ellipse for a closing argument, which she called herself a protector of U.S. democracy and warned of the threat of a second Trump term.
Those who came before us, the patriots at Normandy and Selma, Seneca Falls and Stonewall, on farmlands and factory floors, they did not struggle, sacrifice, and lay down their lives only to see us cede our fundamental freedoms. They didn't do that only to see us submit to the will of another petty tyrant.
Harris spoke from the Ellipse, the same venue where on January 6, 2021, Trump incited a mob of supporters to attack the Capitol to disrupt the certification of Joe Biden's Electoral College victory. Harris's campaign said 75,000 people attended Tuesday night's event, significantly larger than Trump's rally ahead of the insurrection. Donald Trump spent much of Tuesday seeking to control fallout from his racist Madison Square Garden rally Sunday, in which far-right so-called comic Tony Hinchcliffe called Puerto Rico a, quote, floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean, unquote. The New York Times described the rally as a closing carnival of grievances, misogyny, and racism. On Tuesday, Trump called his Madison Square Garden rally a love fest.
There's never been an event so beautiful. It was like a love fest, an absolute love fest, and it was my honor to be involved.
Trump's former UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, and former presidential opponent, who endorsed Trump at the Republican National Convention after unsuccessfully challenging him for the nomination, criticized Trump and the campaign for its attacks on Puerto Ricans and warned its overly masculine message is turning off women voters. Haley was speaking on Fox News.
They need to go and tell Puerto Ricans how much, you know, they do value them. They need to tell Latinos that, but they also need to look at how they're talking about women. I mean, this bromance and this masculinity stuff, I mean, it borders on edgy to the point that it's going to make women uncomfortable.
Meanwhile, President Biden's clarified his remarks, condemning the racist comments made at Trump's Madison Square Garden rally. On Tuesday, Biden told Voto Latino, quote, the only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters, unquote. Trump's backers seized on the remarks, comparing them to Hillary Clinton's 2016 comment calling Trump's supporters a basket of deplorables. On social media, President Biden wrote, quote, his demonization of Latinos is unconscionable. That's all I meant to say, he said. He said he was only talking about the people speaking at the Madison Square Garden rally. A group of 82 U.S. Nobel Prize winners have signed an open letter endorsing Kamala Harris for president, arguing a Trump presidency would, quote, jeopardize any advancements in our standards of living, slow the progress of science and technology, and impede our responses to climate change, they wrote. Meanwhile, more than 1,000 religious leaders across the U.S. have offered a joint endorsement of Harris. Reverend Dr. Bernice King, daughter of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., said, quote, Harris will provide us the opportunity to preserve our democracy and rule of law as we continue the people's fight to create a just, humane, and equitable society, unquote. Reverend King added, quote, a vote for Kamala Harris is not an endorsement of U.S. funding for the war on Gaza, unquote. Meanwhile, Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders has released a video urging supporters to vote for Harris in what he called the most consequential election in our lifetimes. Sanders cited Harris's positions on reproductive rights, wealth inequality, and the climate crisis.
And some of you are saying, how can I vote for Kamala Harris if she is supporting this terrible war? And that is a very fair question. And let me give you my best answer. And that is that even on this issue, Donald Trump and his right-wing friends are worse.
President Trump's former top political advisor, Steve Bannon, was released from a federal prison Tuesday after completing a four-month sentence on charges of contempt of Congress. In 2022, a jury found Bannon guilty of defying congressional subpoenas related to the January 6, 2021 Capitol insurrection. Shortly after his release, Bannon held a news conference in New York City where he was interrupted by the comic Rob Portillo, who disguised himself as a MAGA supporter.
Steve, Robbie Roadsteamer here. I'm wondering, when's the next insurrection, and can we storm the Burger King after this?
Bannon still faces criminal charges in New York for allegedly defrauding donors to an anti-immigrant nonprofit called We Build the Wall, defrauding them out of more than $15 million and laundering the proceeds. That trial is set to begin December 9th. At least 51 people have been killed in regions across southern and eastern Spain, including the region of Valencia, after torrential rains triggered devastating floods, leaving entire roads and towns underwater. Officials said the death toll is likely to grow as search and rescue efforts continue. More than a month's worth of rain fell in less than 24 hours in some areas of southern and eastern Spain, with authorities saying this is one of the worst natural disasters to hit Spain in recent years. In India, air pollution around the national capital of Delhi has soared to 30 times the World Health Organization's recommended limit. Officials blame the worsening climate crisis paired with vehicle emissions and widespread crop stubble burning in neighboring states.
There's so much pollution in Delhi that we cannot even breathe properly. I've been ill for 4 days due to pollution. There is breathlessness and continuous coughing.
And more than one-third of the world's trees may be facing mass extinction due to deforestation and global heating from human activity. The findings were announced Monday at the United Nations Biodiversity Conference, known as COP16, which is underway in Cali, Colombia. This is the first comprehensive assessment on the status of tree species published by the International Union for Conservation of Nature Red List, which warns more than 16 of the 47,000 tree species analyzed in the report are at risk of going extinct, threatening thousands of other species of plants, animals, and fungi that rely on forest ecosystems to survive. IUCN Director General Gretel Aguilar said in a statement, quote, "Trees are the barometer of life. Can you imagine a planet without trees? We humans are capable to reverse this and save these trees that we depend on. The task that we have is huge," they said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, before as many as 75,000 people, Vice President Kamala Harris spoke Tuesday night at the Ellipse in Washington, 1 week before Election Day. Stay with us.
Somos el uno y para el otro, porque los dos miramos este mismo cielo. Los dos tenemos corazón al lado izquierdo, ese que late fuerte cuando yo te veo. Somos el uno el para el otro, porque tú y yo el mismo aire respiramos. ¿Cómo negarlo si el planeta que habitamos se llama igual? Ya ves que no tienes que dudar.
By Crystal Torres. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York. We're joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
With the White House in the background, Vice President Kamala Harris addressed close to 75,000 supporters Tuesday at the Ellipse in Washington, D.C., in the largest rally of her presidential campaign. The campaign estimated that 75,000 people attended the outdoor rally, which took place at the same spot where Donald Trump spoke January 6, 2021, ahead of the Capitol insurrection.
But I know many others are still considering who to vote for, or whether you'll vote at all. So tonight, I will speak to everyone about the choice and the stakes in this election. Look, we know who Donald Trump is. He is the person who stood at this very spot nearly 4 years ago and sent an armed mob to the United States Capitol to overturn the will of the people in a free and fair election. An election that he knew he lost. Americans died as a result of that attack. 140 law enforcement officers were injured because of that attack. And while Donald Trump sat in the White House watching as the violence unfolded on television, he was told by his staff that the mob wanted to kill his own vice president. And Donald Trump responded with two words, "So what?" America, that's who Donald Trump is. And that's who is asking you to give him another 4 years in the Oval Office.
It's like it never went on. Kamala Harris went on to describe Donald Trump as a petty tyrant who is, quote, consumed with grievance and out for unchecked power. While she spoke, hundreds of protesters gathered to call for a U.S. arms embargo on Israel. Medea Benjamin, the co-founder of Code Pink, was removed from Harris's rally along with others.
So they're dragging us out while Kamala Harris is talking, and they're acting like everything is normal, so great. And here she is, part of an administration that has been sending weapons every day to slaughter the children in Gaza, to destroy Lebanon, and now threatening a war with Iran. This is not okay. There is a genocide going on. Wake up. Wake up.
Kamala Harris's rally in Washington, D.C. on the Ellipse came 2 days after Donald Trump held his major rally in Madison Square Garden here in New York, described by the New York Times as a closing carnival of grievances, misogyny and racism. One speaker called Harris the Antichrist. Another described Puerto Rico as a, quote, floating island of garbage. On Tuesday, Donald Trump spoke at Mar-a-Lago, attempting to put a different spin on the event.
I don't think anybody has ever seen anything like what happened the other night at Madison Square Garden. The love in that room, it was breathtaking. And you could have filled it many, many times with the people that were unable to get in. But politicians that have been doing this for a long time, 30 and 40 years, said there's never been an event so beautiful. It was like a love fest. An absolute love fest, and it was my honor to be involved.
Donald Trump later campaigned in Allentown, Pennsylvania, a majority Latinx city, home to 34,000 Puerto Ricans, really one of the hearts of Puerto Rican Pennsylvania, where he was met with protests. Overall, Pennsylvania is home to over 450,000 Puerto Ricans.
We're setting every record. Hispanics, Latinos, nobody loves our Latino community and our Puerto Rican community more than I do. Nobody. You know, it's interesting because I've done more for Puerto Rico than any president by far. Nobody close.
With the presidential election less than a week away, we're joined in Philadelphia by Mark Lamont Hill, host of Upfront on Al Jazeera English and a nightly YouTube show called Night School. He's the co-author of Except for Palestine, The Limits of Progressive Politics, and author of the book We Still Hear, Pandemic, Policing, Protest, and Possibility. Mark, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't you start off by responding to this really epic event last night? I mean, there was the presidential candidate, Vice President Kamala Harris, speaking on the Ellipse where President Trump spoke January 6, 2021. She spoke in front of 75,000 people. Talk about what she said and didn't say.
And it's good to be here, Amy. Thank you for having me back. It was a really epic event in lots of ways. The size and the scale of the event was extraordinary. Donald Trump has campaigned and bragged about the size of his rallies. He's used the size of his rallies in a really disturbing way to be an index of his popularity, his electability, and a kind of mandate that he has, despite losing the last election by a lot of votes. So to see Kamala Harris there certainly showed that she's not losing steam. And she made a final case to the American people. And she made the best case that a liberal Democrat can make, which is Donald Trump is worse. Whatever critiques you have of her, she pointed out that democracy might be imperiled by his reelection. She pointed to January 6th, not just that it happened, but that he sort of underwrote it, that he animated it, that he inspired it. His cruel indifference to Mike Pence. But she didn't just talk about January 6th. She talked about the potential impact of a Trump presidency on everyday working people, the increasing taxes on imports, cutting taxes on billionaires. She did a solid job of pointing out all of the ways that Donald Trump is a threat, all of the ways that women's reproductive health, reproductive freedom, access to IVF. She went through all the things where Donald Trump is legitimately a worse choice. And for many people out there, particularly this audience, who may be saying, look, I hate both of these corporate candidates. I don't want either of them. I'm disturbed by them. She sort of made a case for why you might want to think of Trump. The problem is what you asked me about, secondly, which is what she left out. She didn't talk about, for example, what's going on in Lebanon. She didn't talk about what's going on in Gaza. And the reason she didn't talk about that is because she can't make a credible case in that area for how she's any different than Donald Trump. I disagree very strongly with Senator Bernie Sanders, who says even on Gaza, Trump is worse. Trump is awful on Gaza. He was awful 4 years ago, awful 8 years ago. He cut UNRWA. He did all the things long before October 7th. But there's no credible case in the midst of a genocide that he would be worse. And if so, it's a distinction without a difference. I mean, it's somewhat absurd to say, yeah, I have helped underwrite and fund. I've been part of an administration that has pushed forward one of the worst atrocities in modern history. But the other guy may have gotten even more people killed. I mean, it's a terrible argument. So at the end of the day, what we saw from Kamala Harris speaks for itself, but so does what Donald Trump did. When you go to his rallies and you hear the xenophobia, the racism, the calls to violence, the implicit calls to violence, that is, and even the so-called love fest that he depicted was a love fest among xenophobes and racists. It's a white supremacist love fest. So at the end of the day, whatever decision voters make, they have to be very clear here that if you vote Donald Trump, you are voting for a reenactment of a very, very, very dangerous moment in American history.
And Mark, I wanted to ask you, Vice President Harris was in Philadelphia last weekend attending church and later visiting a barbershop to meet with African-American men. And there's been a lot of focus on the supposed shift, especially of black male voters and Latino males toward Trump. But there's a recent ABC Ipsos poll that comes out that essentially says that this isn't happening, that basically that there's still sort of the same historic pattern among both African-Americans and Latinos in terms of support for a Democratic candidate. I'm wondering your thoughts about this.
Well, yeah, absolutely. First of all, these polls historically have done a very poor job of assessing the voting patterns and predicting the voting outcomes of black people, poor people, and other people who are outside of the margin or on the margins of mainstream America. But the idea that 30% of black men were going to vote Trump, 27% of black men were going to vote Trump, was always absurd. And many black journalists, many black social scientists, many black political scientists in particular always said that. And as the number drops from 27 to 21, you're going to see it come down to earth. And it's going to be far closer, as you pointed out, to the traditional numbers. Now, might it go up 3%, 4%, 5%? Absolutely. It might be a little bit higher. I suspect it will be. But it won't be anywhere near the astronomical numbers that have been predicted. And I think that's problematic to suggest for a couple of reasons. One, there is a kind of panic around it that suggested that black men were these weird, pathological, incomparably patriarchal people who were going to vote against Kamala Harris and vote for Trump because we were these awful people. And I think that's problematic. And so the outreach to us from people like President Obama was less, hey, here's how Kamala Harris is a good choice, and more like, hey, act right. It was part of a long pattern of President Obama chastising of black men.